About this hour regarding this NCOV, this SARS 2.0, this very dangerous virus that we haven't talked about in depth, and we're going to go over that with Dr. Henry Nyman. I want to reiterate the one story. You can see a lot of very interesting reading and headlines at Rents.com right now. That Japan cruise liner story is just like a Hollywood horror film. Think about it. 3,700 people, 10 identified as being infected and having been obviously spreading the virus on board, 3,700 others, crew and guests, must stay on that ship, isolated in quarantine for the next 14 days minimum. And if they find another person who tests positive, it could be extended. So this is one of those really strange things. Okay, Dr. Henry Nyman, one of the world's foremost virologists, is back tonight, as he is every night. Very glad to have Henry here. All right, my friend, things are continuing to accelerate at an alarming rate. And then we're going to talk about these people who are dropping over essentially dead. And I've got all the videos up there in headlines. You can see them. I want to warn you, though, they're not easy viewing. So please don't show them to children or young people. And if you're offended by things like this, think twice about it. It's really ugly stuff. Henry, welcome back.
Well, it's, I guess it's good to be back. But anyway, I'm back, kind of give a little bit of update and go into detail on that cruise ship. It's worse than you said, actually. So I'll get into that and then go through some of the sequences and the patients here in the United States.
Yeah, we want to talk about that security guard and others who are just dropping dead in the streets.
Right.
That's a huge story.
I'll get into that. There's a lot there and some serious comparisons there. So we'll get to that also. So I'll start out with just the numbers that are coming out of China. And they're somewhat instructive that the numbers as of tonight, there were 24,324 confirmed cases, 23,260 suspect cases, for a total of 47,584. And for your listeners who have been following along and looking at those two numbers between the confirmed and the suspect, just as a reminder, confirmed means that they've been PCR confirmed twice. They're initially PCR confirmed at the local level, and then the positives are sent to Wuhan, where the national labs are, to be tested a second time. And those that are positive there go into the confirmed category. One of the issues, though, is they've been overwhelmed by the number of samples that they have to confirm. And so if you looked at the numbers in the past, there were quite a few more suspect than there were confirmed because they were getting in more samples than they could test. And so they were kind of the rate-limiting step on how quickly the confirmed could go up. And since they couldn't keep up, the suspect kept getting higher and higher. And over the weekend, it looked like they were starting to catch up. And today, they actually pretty much had caught up in that they confirmed about the same number that came in. So the suspect number for today was 23,260, and the number yesterday was 23,214, so it's almost exactly the same. And for the first time, the number of confirmed cases is more than the suspects. So there's 24,324 confirmed on 23,260 suspects. Over the weekend, there was about a 6,000 person gap between the confirmed and the suspect.
If I might make one little comment, Henry, just to fit in and amplify what you said. For our listeners, when you hear the stats, confirmed is a double confirmed case. A suspect case is a single confirmed case. The Chinese will not call it confirmed unless they do a second PCR test. But for all intents and purposes, you've got either a double confirmation or a single confirmation. You got confirmation.
Right. And that's the standard procedure. Because if you notice, there was a new case in British Columbia announced today. And they held a press conference and announced they had their second case. And they didn't call it a confirmed. They called it a presumptive positive because they had tested it locally and it was positive. And they were confident that it would be confirmed in Winnipeg. So they held the press conference and they said, we've got our second case. And they said that, you know, it's currently listed as a presumptive positive. When it's confirmed in Winnipeg, then it'll go on the website as a confirmed case. And they did the same thing in Toronto. The initial positives, they called a press conference because these labs have done enough of these tests, even though this is a new test, they've done enough PCR tests that if they get a positive, and they did enough, you know, controls on it. So if they get a positive, that virtually always gets confirmed at the national lab. And it's the same thing in China. So when they're saying suspect cases, they are talking about cases that they've already tested and they're positive. So they're in the suspect category, and it's very different than the suspect cases that are, you know, at a new country that somebody's come in and they have flu-like symptoms and they were in Wuhan or somewhere else in China and they said, well, this is a suspect case and we're going to test them. And those suspect cases haven't been tested at all. They just have symptoms and they have to get confirmed by having a test and probably two tests. And so they're very different. In those cases, you know, maybe 10% end up being positive, maybe 20%. It kind of depends on how believable their symptoms are. But in any event, so what's happening is the confirmed cases in China they could only go up as fast as the national lab could actually run the tests. And so there was kind of a limit on how much it could go up. So, I mean, the media will look at the numbers tomorrow or the numbers that came out tonight, and they'll say, well, this was a big deal because the confirmed cases went up by 4,000. And because they were 20,000 yesterday, now they're 24,000. And part of the reason they did that, they went up so much, is because they just boosted up their capacity so they can do a little bit more testing. And they've been getting 4,000 all along, but they haven't been converting 4,000 into the confirmed category. So the suspect number went up and they would, if you added the two together, they would add up to between 4,000 and 5,000, but they would only be going up about half of that on the confirmed side because half of the tests moved them into that category and half of the samples didn't get tested. So the suspect went up. So in any event, they boosted up their capacity enough now so that you know, the people that are just looking at confirmed cases, they're going to say, oh, look, it's going up 4,000 a day when it only used to go up 2,000 a day. But it was really going up 4,000 all along, but there half of them were tucked away in the suspect. But but anyway, that's the one number. So, you know, the headline will be 4,000 new cases, whereas usually it's only two or three. But in reality, it's about even. It's been between 4,000 and 5,000 for a week now each day. And then the other number is the number of deaths and the I don't have it in front of me, but it was I think the number of deaths was up to 490, and the number of
released
was about 800. So that got a little bit bigger. So they finally got the release, the discharged a little bit above the deaths, but it's
I've got your numbers. I've got your numbers here.
Yeah, it's like 490 and 8 something.
493 dead, 902 recovered.
Okay.
Now that's 500 to 900 is what you got. Here's the other problem, friends. If you remember back to SARS, and I do refer to this as SARS 2.0 for good reason, I think, the number of people who recovered and were adjudged cured, many of them suffered apparent permanent long-term neurological and or other problems. They weren't completely as they were before they became infected. That was a disturbing factor. We don't know if the same is true with this particular virus, but I would suspect it very well might be. Time perhaps will tell.
Well, it almost definitely is. And the reason it almost definitely is because these people are in the hospital a long time. There's 50,000 people. They're in the hospital whether they've been tested once or twice. You know, the suspect ones are just as sick as the confirmed ones. It's just a matter of how soon it's been. And so there's almost 50,000 people that have been PCR confirmed now. And there's only been a little over 1,000 that have been released.
So 902 on this one, 902.
Right. I'm sorry, not released. Have an outcome. So you got 900 that have been released, and you've got 500 that have died.
Yeah,
so
that's resolved.
It's 1,400 of the 47,000 that you've actually got an outcome for. So the vast majority are still in the hospital. And a lot of them have been in the hospital since December. You know, they've been in the hospital for 6 weeks. So if they're that sick that they can't be released from the hospital, then that's an indication that they're battling this virus. Because if they were fine, they need the beds, they would definitely be discharging them, and they're not. So that gives you an idea.
Also, Henry, a lot of people are sick and they're home. They can't get in the hospitals. Yeah. They're not being counted in many cases.
Well, we'll get to that because a lot of them are dead and they're not being counted either. So, I mean,
Did you see the video, Henry, of the whole family dead on the floor of their apartment or whatever it was? My God.
When they knock on the door and nobody answers, that means everybody's dead. I know. We'll go over that a little bit because there's disturbing videos. It's not just people at home. It's people on the street. It's people in shopping centers. It's people, waiting for the train. We'll get to it. But in general, that whole scenario has been described previously. And unfortunately, it wasn't described during SARS. It was described during 1918. So this is like the pandemic of 1918, where people basically dropped dead sitting on a bus going to work, you know, or falling dead in the street. And there's lots of pictures of that, and we'll go through that video of the security guard. But anyway, before we go to that, I wanted to go through this cruise ship that they just got the positives today. You know, I think the one person they kind of knew about, and the symptomatic they knew about, but the numbers are remarkable. So you got the confirmed part, okay, but basically, and the total number, there's a little over 37,000 that are on this ship.
3,700.
I'm sorry, 3,700. But this, I think it started in Japan, it went to Hong Kong, and one of the people on the ship lived in Hong Kong, and he got off the ship and actually went on a bus tour in Hong Kong. And two of the positives actually were on the bus with him. So they not only were on the ship with him, they were also on the bus with him. And then he came back and developed symptoms while he was on the ship. And then that kind of raised the suspicions. And there are... I mean, these numbers are ridiculous. There are 120 on the ship that are symptomatic. And then there's another 153 that are contacts of the 120. So there's really 273 on this ship that were tested. But they've only got the results on the first 31. And 10 of the first 31 are positive. So the 10 that are positive are off the ship now. They took them off, put it in the hospital. But they're waiting for the results on 140 more or 240 more tests. And if it's anything like the first one where a third of them are positive, there may already be 80 people positive on the ship. And the ones that aren't positive probably just got infected too soon. And they don't have enough virus to have symptoms or be positive yet. And they're going to be sitting on the ship for a lot more than 14 days. But, you know, well, at a minimum of 14 days. Mm-hmm. And then some of them are going to be retested and they're going to get sick. And by the time they get done, I wouldn't be surprised if half or more of the 3,700 people are going to end up with this virus. And it's the people on board include 2,666 passengers and 1,045 crew. And the passengers are from 56 different countries. And they, quite a few of them are from Japan, but quite a few of them are also from Hong Kong and Taiwan. So I think those are the biggest representations.
We'll probably be getting videos from the ship fairly soon. That's just a horror story.
Right. So it's kind of they're on there. And it's almost like because they're going to be quarantined on the ship, you know, those that aren't sick today are probably going to be sick by the time, you know, their 14 days are up and they're going to fail to you know, be positive, negative so they can get off the ship. So the bottom line
No masks on the ship either, probably.
They might start doing that, but I think it's going to be too late.
Just a bit late.
These people have been on the ship for, I'm not sure the time frame of this, but they were on the ship to go to Hong Kong, and then they were on this, and then they got off the ship when they did this little bus tour. The bus tour is optional, but, you know, people that weren't on the bus were probably in Hong Kong. So they were roaming around in Hong Kong, and then they got back on the ship. And now they're on the ship, so it's not clear how many in Hong Kong got infected, but it is clear that at least 10 are positive, but it's likely that a lot more than 10 are already positive, but they haven't read the test results yet. They've already collected the samples. They just haven't run. They've already run through 31 tests, and they've got, you know, a grand total of 273 to do. So they've got over 240 more to be tested. So that's why I say it's not that 10 are positive. It's 10 out of 31 are positive. And they still got 240 tests to read. So I think these numbers are going to go up every day. You know, I don't know how quickly they're going to read them. They might get, you know, most of them read tomorrow, and all of a sudden there'll be 50 more that are confirmed and have to come off.
This just is what a terrible thing. This whole thing is terrible, but this is peculiarly terrible. Trapped on a cruise ship.
Okay, so another development today is a little bit on the sequencing front. There were more sequences that were made available, and that included the first sequence from South Korea. And that one is the same lineage as in the United States that's got this ORF8 mutation. And I got a lot of questions about that, you know, from yesterday. So I thought I'd go through that a little bit more detail to understand why that's a concern and why I keep mentioning it. And why it keeps coming up over and over again. Just to give you an idea, the ORF8, ORF means open reading frame. So that means that there's no stop codon. So if you read the genetic information, you can make a protein out of it. And it's not that big. It's only like 121 amino acids, but it encodes a protein. They usually just call them ORF because they're not sure exactly what the protein does, and they don't really give it a name. They just say, and they number them by reading frame. So they start with one, and they go, actually, 8 is the highest one they go to. So, I mean, it's the last open reading frame, and it codes a small protein. And I got interested in this outbreak when sequences were deposited at this depository. These came out of Guangdong Province, and they came from a and they were actually marked. So when these sequences are deposited, it's different labs around the world. A lot of them are in China, actually. So it's a lab in China that basically got the sample from the hospital that this person went to, and the hospital collected the sample. They give it to one of the local labs. You know, these are big labs, but it's one that's in Guangdong Province, and they go ahead and get the sample, and they can sequence it and get the sequence, and then they put it on deposit so that researchers around the world can go and look at these and see what the sequence looks like. So these have been deposited a couple of weeks ago, and they come with a characterization sheet. So the characterization sheet gives the name of the sequence. It gives, you know, usually age and gender of the person. They give the date it was collected. And because they're doing this so quickly, you can pretty much nail down who these people were. You know, what was said about them, you don't get their identification, but with the age and gender, sometimes some of these new cases, they give the age and gender. So you can kind of figure out, well, this sample came from this patient. And sometimes they put additional information. So in this case, it actually said family cluster, and it said family cluster on three of the sequences from Shenzhen. And then you can generate the sequence, and the sequence is mostly going to be the original sequence, and then it'll have a few changes in it. And in this case, this was a cluster from Shenzhen, and it had three changes. And there were three samples that were labeled family cluster from Shenzhen, and all three samples had the identical sequence. So they had the same three mutations or polymorphisms. Sometimes the change changes the protein, and it's called non-synonymous. Sometimes it doesn't change the protein, and it's called synonymous. So the synonymous, in general, as far as the protein function, aren't going to make any difference. This protein is going to be the same, even though the RNA is changed a little bit. So this one had a non-synonymous change in that it changed the protein at that position in ORF8. And I was particularly interested in ORF8 because I had been involved with the SARS outbreak. And with the SARS outbreak, it was kind of the same thing. Different labs around the world, mostly in Asia again, because that's where most of the cases were, once they figured out what the mystery disease was, and that it was a virus, and then it was a coronavirus, and then it was a novel coronavirus that hadn't really been seen before, then each lab would put the data up on their website, and you go to their website and you can get the sequence. And that outbreak really centered around this incident at the Metropole Hotel, which was a tourist hotel in Hong Kong. And what had happened was the outbreak really began again in Guangdong Province, and initially China wasn't really admitting there was a problem, and this kind of newsletter called ProMed had been hearing rumors that there was this mystery disease in Guangdong Province, and that, you know, some of the people were dying, and they had this atypical pneumonia, and they didn't really know what they had, but it was a concern because they, you know, had I think they might even had some healthcare workers at the time that were involved. But they didn't know what it was. And then it turned out that a physician who was treating the patients went to the Metropole Hotel. He came to Hong Kong for a wedding. And by the time he got there, he was very ill. And he was really only at the hotel for a day. But that was enough to infect like a dozen people at the hotel, including, I believe, seven that were on his floor where his room was. And those people ended up, I mean, he ended up dying, his brother ended up dying, but the virus was in all of these other tourists that were staying at the hotel, and then they left to go home, and one went to Toronto, one went to Hanoi, one went to Singapore, and one went to, was actually visiting from Hong Kong. And so they all ended up going into hospitals, or the one in Canada actually died, but she infected her son, and her son went in the hospital. And then the outbreak was off and running, that essentially these people were infecting the nurses. They were having outbreaks. Everybody, you know, this mystery disease, which used to be in Guangdong Province, now was in Toronto, Canada, and it was in Hanoi in Vietnam, and it was in Singapore, and it was in Hong Kong. And then when the sequences came out, they all had this change in the ORF8 gene. They had a significant mutation. It was a 29 nucleotide deletion, which means that 29 of the letters out of this, you know, 360 letters were missing. And that changed the reading frame, and that pretty much inactivated that protein. And then after that, that particular virus that had the ORF8 gene inactivated, that was the one that was responsible for all of these outbreaks, these international outbreaks. And after that particular virus was more infectious, so people got infected easier, and it was more lethal, so that the case fatality rate started going up. And that's what was alarming, was both people were dying. They were usually in their 50s or 60s, but normally they wouldn't die from a respiratory disease at that age. And the healthcare workers were getting infected, and they were younger. They weren't necessarily dying, but they were getting severe pneumonia, and they would be hospitalized. And so when I saw this in Shenzhen, which is again in Guangdong Province, and it was in all three of them, and they didn't have a big deletion, but they did have a mutation that changed the protein. I thought that, well, you know, this is clearly a cluster because they had the same sequence and it said they were related. And so that got my attention. And then I started looking at the reports out of Shenzhen, and I saw that they had a high number of clusters, that at that time they had 32 positives for the whole Guangdong province, and they had six clusters that involved 17 people. So 17 out of the 32, or more than half of the people, were in six well-defined clusters, and this was one of them. This was probably one of the bigger ones because this was three. And then shortly after that, a paper came out in Lancet describing this cluster, and that indicated that it wasn't just the three that the sequences were from, but there were actually five people, and that they had been infected when they visited relatives in Wuhan, and they had multiple people in Wuhan that were infected, and then right. The group there were infected. They went back to Shenzhen and they infected somebody else who had been to Wuhan. And then there was a 10-year-old child who was asymptomatic, and they ended up doing a CAT scan and his lungs had been damaged. So there was a lot of information on this cluster. And then when the first case was identified in the U.S. in Washington, it had the same mutation in Orf8, and it was the same lineage. And then after that was the case in Chicago, and that one had the same mutation. And then, as it turned out, of the first five cases in the United States, four, which included one in L.A. and included one in Phoenix, all had that mutation. And so the issue was that if one particular lineage started to become more common, because I had already looked at a lot of sequences that had been from Wuhan, and at the time, none of them had this particular change. And so it was kind of like the early ones didn't have it, and then the disease started to take off, and the numbers started to go up, and all of a sudden this ORF8 mutation was starting to appear, and it was in four out of the five cases in the United States. And then there were a couple other sequences that were back in Guangdong province. And then there were some recombination where they picked up another mutation that was in another lineage, which was tacked on top of it. And that's an indication that the virus is very highly concentrated. So people are getting infected by a couple. And then the numbers keep on getting bigger. Then the Chicago case ended up infecting her husband, and so that was the first cluster. And then their grandchild has a fever. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but it might be a growing cluster. And then there was the first cases in England were another cluster, and they had the same lineage. And then today, the first case in South Korea also had the lineage. So the concern is that this ORF8 mutation is associated with increased spread, more easily formed clusters.
More virulent version of the virus.
A more virulent version of the virus. And then the other thing that happened today is the CDC was able to get that virus to grow from the case in Washington. So they've actually got it growing in a Vero cell line, and they have two different isolates. So they actually have the virus itself. These other sequences came from the sample. So they take the sample and they do a PCR and they know that the virus is there, and they can amplify it and they can get the sequence. But they have a limit. They're limited by what's in that sample. If they get the virus to grow, then they've got it growing on cells. They can grow as much virus as they want. They can go ahead and actually turn it into a vaccine. They can grow enough of the virus that they can take whatever they want to target, like the spike protein and just pull that spike protein out, so you're not going to get affected by the virus. You've just got one of the genes of it, but you're going to be able to mount an immune response that you can get vaccinated against it, so that you aren't going to get affected by the virus. But that's not going to happen immediately. I mean, that's probably a year off.
Right.
But they do have the virus growing anyway. So that was kind of the other development on the sequencing front. And
excellent.
Then the other piece of information in the United States was that over the weekend, there were like, let's see, two in Santa Clara County in California, two in San Benito County in California, and one in Boston. And it turned out the two in San Benito Sunday night kind of took a turn for the worse. And they were brought by special ambulance from San Benito to UCSF in San Francisco, which is a facility that's more able to handle more severe cases. And so I don't know what that sequence isn't out yet, so I'm not sure if that one's the same lineage, but it was a cluster. It was another husband and wife where the husband went to, I think he went to Wuhan and came back and affected his wife. And now they're both up at UCSF. So that's probably the most severe case in the United States, or its cases, because it's two of them. And they're not doing as well as the others are doing, and they had to be moved.
They got worse. This is a bad virus, friends. It doesn't just come and go. All right, let's talk about this. Go ahead.
Right.
Get to myocarditis.
So the concern is So the concern is that what's in China is not just viruses to kind of give you a cold or kind of give you symptoms, and you get identified, and there's a lot of publicity about another case has been exported to some other country, and the people turn around and get better within a few days, and it's kind of, well, the virus is there, but it's bad in China, but it's not bad here. And this couple is an example where it may end up being bad here, where this may end up going into a severe case or a severe cluster. And and the same thing may be going on in Chicago with their grandchild having a fever, although that he hasn't been confirmed. But that kind of brings us as to how bad is it in China. And there have been, quite a few videos that have come out, and these videos would show people that they were literally just standing there and falling over, and some of them fell over and were still moving around, and some of them, they have pictures where people just look like they died, and they're just laying flat on the ground, and people are running around and trying to figure out what's going on there. And other ones, they've actually got the hazmat crews are there, and they're actually loading up the bodies, and they're putting the bodies in the body bags. And so that was, evidence that people are literally falling over in the street. They're just walking the street, they're falling over, and they're basically dead. And then one of the videos that came out showed a picture of actually two people. They were in the street on their backs, side by side. I'm not sure they died in the middle of the street, but they had been moved to the middle of the street, and they were waiting for the ambulance to come and pick them up. And the caption on that said that both of them just died suddenly. And the reason they're dying suddenly is because they're getting myocarditis, that the virus is going to their heart and is causing kind of an instant death. And they're just essentially dying on the spot. And then there was another video that actually showed a person on a gurney that had been brought into the hospital, and they kind of had a blanket over the patient.
A blanket or a sheet over the patient. Yeah.
Or a sheet. And all the people around, you could see they were in the hospital, and everybody was wearing a mask, and some of the background, you could see, had you know, more extensive coverage, and as far as what they were wearing. And this person was just shaking, and the whole gurney and the sheets were just shaking, and it was like the person was.
These were not just little shakes. These were major jerking spasms. I mean, major.
Right,
looked like a seizure.
And then this morning, there was a video of a security guard that was just sitting at his desk with all his monitors there. And I'm not sure where he was, but I'm pretty sure he was in Wuhan. And he was sitting there with his laptop in front of him. And then all of a sudden, he started to jerk a little bit. And then he started to lean over, and he kind of fell off the chair that he was on.
Backward,
and kind of gave out this sound, and he tried to grab onto something. He grabbed onto the computer. The computer went on the floor, and he went on the floor, and his you know, his little walkie-talkie was there under him. You could see the light flashing on the walkie-talkie, and then he went into like a seizure, and he just started. His legs and his arms were spasming for 30 seconds, and then he just stopped, and he just laid there flat, and the video showed him 10 minutes later, he was exactly in the same place, and he did not look like he was alive, and it was just a security video, and it kind of captured the whole episode, and it looked very real, especially how he fell out of the chair and kind of hit his head on the ground. It wasn't like, you know, this guy was just kind of playing around or doing whatever. He was, this was a real.
So there are a number of other videos. I've got them all. It must be 8 or 9 videos that came on the site that isn't known for its editorial accuracy. But these videos are clearly from China and clearly show things that are appalling. They just paint a picture that is not encouraging. These people, if they are dropping over dead in the streets and indoors without showing any symptoms of being ill necessarily, Henry mentioned myocarditis. That would suggest that the virus, we know it goes into the lungs, we know it goes into the digestive tract. We are expecting now that the virus also may have an affinity for attacking the human heart. Now, from moment of inception of that infection in the heart until the person drops over dead, I don't have any idea how to project how long that is, but the heart doesn't ache or doesn't send signals of discomfort or pain. It just keeps beating as long as it can. But it would be interesting to know, although I don't think we will know, how heavily viral laden these people's hearts are. If myocarditis is killing people, this is a triple threat virus. Digestive, lungs, and now the heart. I've never seen anything like this.
Well, unfortunately, it has been described, and it was described for the 1918 pandemic. And that didn't involve a coronavirus. That involved an influenza virus. And that influenza virus had some of the same characteristics where people would just drop over dead. You know, they were on the bus going to work, and they would sit down, and they would just keel over and drop dead on their way to work. So, I mean, they felt good enough to go to work. And they never got there, and it was just this sudden type of a death. And there's many descriptions of this where people were just falling over and dropping dead. And I think they also had instances where they had seizures when this happened. And that pretty much is what this security guard looked like, as well as the person that was on the gurney. And the bodies on the, I mean, there's videos of, you know, whole families being dead at their house. There's people that are in the shopping mall that are just laying on the floor. There's people in the hospital, in the waiting room, where they've got multiple people that are in body bags at the feet of the people that are sitting waiting
right there,
to be seen.
Right on the ground. Now, the question I have, Henry, is these people who are, let's say this family that died at home, three, four people, I don't know how many there were, and the video has sound, it's just horrible when the door is opened and a relative goes in and she starts screaming. They're all dead in there. Are they counted as official numbers of deceased, or are they just, you don't know, because they're not coming out of hospitals. We don't know what the Chinese are doing with the stats.
Right. The people that are taking the videos, including the myocarditis one, are saying that they're not being recorded as viral deaths. They're saying the myocarditis ones are just myocarditis, and they're not saying it has anything to do with the virus. And this is somewhat reminiscent of what happened with the SARS outbreak in Taiwan. In Taiwan, they had serious cases, and you know, healthcare workers had been getting infected, and they ended up opting to not test them, and they just classified them as SARS-like. And these were severe cases, and, you know, they were obviously SARS cases. They just didn't have the laboratory confirmation that they were, and they would die, and they would cremate them because they, again, they didn't want the virus to spread. And so they would be cremated and never tested and never counted as a SARS case. They were counted as a SARS-like case. And they put this was all up on their website. I mean, they had two columns. They had SARS and they had SARS-like, and they had their outcomes there. And the case fatality rate was higher for the SARS-like cases than the SARS cases, you know, because the SARS-like were all very, very ill. And, you know, the majority of them didn't recover, and they ended up dying. And actually, the same thing happened with Toronto as far as the dangers. They had a large outbreak, and then it kind of tampered down, and then it kind of came back. And so they had a lot of sick people and quite a few deaths. And usually, if a person's fairly sick or dies, they can get a virus isolate out of it. They can collect a sample. They can get a sample while they're alive and they're intubated, so they can actually draw a sample from the lungs, and that's where the virus is highest concentration in these advanced cases, so they can isolate the virus. And out of that whole outbreak, they only had one isolate called Tor-1 for Toronto, and that was it. And that was from the first outbreak, and you never got any sequences from the second outbreak because they didn't collect any samples. So both of those are examples where in the hospital, when the patients are very sick and their viral load is high, then it's mm-hmm. dangerous. And rather than risk, you know, healthcare workers or personnel, even though, you know, they're heavily decked out in protective outfits, they didn't collect the samples in Toronto for just to isolate the virus, and they didn't collect the samples in Taiwan to confirm that these were actually SARS cases. And so I'm pretty confident that they're not collecting samples from dead people in China, that essentially is not going to affect anything. They're going to treat them like they're infected with the virus, and they would do that anyway because they wouldn't have the results until they moved the body. So the body is going to be transported the same way, regardless of whether they get tested or not. And there's a very good chance that they never do get tested, that they take the body and whatever, I think there's cremations going on in China also. So the body gets cremated. It doesn't get tested. And, you know, the ones that die on the street, they diagnose it as myocarditis. It is just sudden death where they were walking around and all of a sudden they were dead. And that's the diagnosis. And there's no testing, so it's not listed.
No, they just zip them up and take them to the crematory.
Right. So there's probably an undercount on the fatalities just because of the nature of the death and the lack of a real need to get a diagnosis unless it's just for, you know, historical records, you know, to know exactly why they died. But you know, they know why they died, so you know they just don't have tests to confirm it, and they're not putting them in as a confirmed case. And so that's kind of the latest development indicating that the situation in China is fairly dire, and it's not really clear how easy it is going to be. It's going to be too contained. It's going to be exceedingly difficult. It's probably too late now to really keep it contained. I couldn't look at it any differently than that.
I agree. This cruise ship is going to become a very dramatic news story in the weeks to come. Watch. Hong Kong appears to have been well seeded, or enough seeds have been planted there to turn that incredibly dense city into a hellhole as well. We will see. Thank you, Henry. A lot of information. Very useful. Very important.
Okay. We'll check it again tomorrow.
All right. Good night. Okay. All right. Thanks to all of you for being here and participating. We appreciate that. Wednesday night, tomorrow night, and again, tomorrow is the Senate vote, the final vote on the impeachment of Donald Trump. We'll see. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.